Good morning, everyone. I'm not sure, can you hear me? Good morning, everyone. I'm Clive Kaiser with Oregon State University, and I'm based in the Walla Walla Valley. So what I'm going to be talking about today is the systems that I've worked in collaboration with the Department of Environmental Quality, looking at pesticide levels in the Walla Walla River. So for those of you who don't know where Umatilla County is, it's in far-flung eastern Oregon, and the Walla Walla River is a perennial river, and it's a fish-bearing stream. So it has pretty good significance for the environmental groups, and we have the Confederated Tribes of the Umatilla Indian Reservation, which have requirements in terms of cubic feet per second left in the river to be able to keep those fish streams and runs going all year round. So Umatilla County is the breadbasket of Oregon. It's the most food production takes place in our county. The wheat is the big gorilla in the room, but the fruit industries, which I'm responsible for, and the wine grape industries are also significant players. The DEQ was mandated with checking the pesticide levels in the rivers and streams and tributaries of the Walla Walla River, and they did some testing, and they tested multiple streams around the area, and then they found that there were unacceptable levels of pesticides in the main stem and some of the tributaries that ran through the orchards. So they approached both myself and the farmers and the Walla Walla Basin Watershed Council to see if we could work on trying to reduce those levels in the rivers. The nice thing that happened was the DEQ did not take a regulatory approach, which has become an example, and NOAA has embraced this particular policy in terms of working with people to try and reduce those through a voluntary process. So that's one of the key things that has been an extremely successful program, is that this is a collaborative effort and it's a voluntary process. So the DEQ started monitoring in 2005, and that was when I started with Oregon State University. And they, between 2005 and 2008, they tested 12 main pesticides, and those are the 12 most toxic pesticides to fish and aquatic life. In 2009, and this is a totally transparent process, in 2008, each year they come through and present the results to the growers in an annual research and extension meeting that I hold. They announced to the growers that they'd be increasing the suite of pesticides. They upgraded their equipment, and they went from 12 pesticides to about 120 pesticides. I thought that boded badly for the growers because we had the 12 under control at that point, as you'll see, but we went up to 120, and I was expecting things to go awry. But glad to say that of all those pesticides tested, of the suite of 120, we're only seeing around 4 that have been problematic at any time. So chlorpyrifos, which is extremely toxic to seminoid life, was fairly toxic in the 2006 level. It was above the bench level in 2005, way above the bench level in 2006, and again in 2009. But what it was a case of when they came in 2005, they showed us how high above the benchmark levels we were, and they asked for a 10% reduction over 6 years. That was what they requested of the growers. And they tested in 2005, so that was their starting point. 2006, they came and actually announced that they were going to be testing it with the rivers, and that was when they found this really high level, and they asked for the reduction. And we achieved more than that in the first year in 2007. 2009, you can see the hiccup. Carbaryl, which is another really toxic product, consistently below the benchmark levels for the entire time that we've been monitoring the rivers and streams. Malathion, 2014, there was a bump, and this was associated with the spotted winged Drosophila. There was a huge increase in use of spotted winged malathion for spotted winged Drosophila because of the 3 to 5 day repeat use of the chemical, so we saw a bump in that. But again, 2015, we were able to bring that down again. The diuron, the average was again below the benchmark, but you can see there's a spike once in a while. So the one treatment in all the tests across the thing was above the benchmark. So diuron is a herbicide that we were able to find out that it was actually the irrigation districts that were using the diuron during the off season. And when the tributaries have run dry, that's when they were using the diuron. But it has such a long half-life in the soil that when they turned the irrigation on again the following season, the diuron solubilized and actually was found in the rivers. So it was last year's application that was showing up this year. So we worked with the irrigation district and we got them to switch out to a different chemistry that was soft on the seminoid life. So total number of pesticide detections, The general trend has been downwards, so that's a tribute to the growers and how they've been handling this whole thing. And what did we do? So significant reductions in means and median concentrations, and the maximum concentrations have come down too. So we had a significant decrease in diazinon. We decreased the detections from 2006 by 8 times. There were no detections between 2007 and 16, so a huge credit there as well. At one site, their reduction was a 73% reduction, and the maximum concentration decreased by 83%. Then at the other site, it was a 78% reduction with a 94% decrease in maximum concentrations. So 2008, the only negative concentration of pesticides we picked up was chlorpyrifos in the main stem of the Walla Walla. And as a result of that, I worked with growers doing house visits. We have the annual meeting, but not all the growers turn out for that, so then it becomes a case of house visits. And knowing which streams and which growers are on the things, you can super sleuth it and work with the growers and do your individual house visits and explain to them. So chlorpyrifos is typically a dormant application in oil for scale and other insects that are in the bark of the trees overwintering. There are other products, which are softer products like Esteem, which have, in fact, better efficacies, but they are more expensive. So there is a trade-off for the growers. But despite the increased cost, the growers realized that this was in their own best interest not to have too much attention from the DEQ. So they worked with us, and they worked to bring those levels down. And they've been working extremely well with us, which is, if anyone's been to Eastern Oregon, they'll know how conservative people are there. So it's extremely difficult to get people to adopt things the first time around. But this was not difficult because the threat of regulation always lurking in the background is a great incentive for people to do the right thing. So other things we did is worked with the progressive farmers who actually had problems as well. And what we were finding is that growers weren't working with their tractor drivers to do best management practices. So working with them, we were able to explain to them, you know, the drift of the sprays, especially when you're doing a mist blower, is quite significant up and out. So the net result was got the growers to look at turning their nozzles off on one side of the spray of the sprayer when there were two rows, because many of the growers have historical orchards where they've planted right up to the edge of the actual streams. So when they're spraying them, obviously you're getting drift through the trees into the streams. So working with the growers then to spray on the one side of the trees away from the streams on the first two rows, and then go through full nozzles on both sides of the sprayer. Other things that we did, novel things that we introduced in conjunction with the Integrated Plant Protection Center, was putting up flags on the actual stream banks. And if you have a streamer or a flag on the edge of the bank, it's very easy for the tractor driver as he's driving to see which way the wind is blowing. And if the wind is blowing towards the stream, well, don't spray. Go to the other side of the stream and spray that block on that block of the side of the stream. So it was quite easy and a very effective tool to get growers and tractor drivers to start realizing that what are the potential for drift and how's it going to happen. Another thing, I always joke with my growers, the ones that still have flood irrigation. The Romans gave it to us 2,000 years ago, and we still have it in Eastern Oregon. But despite that, some of the growers were spraying with mist blowers during irrigation events. So you have water on the ground and sprays being sprayed above. Obviously, you're going to get chemicals in the water. When it comes back out the orchard and on the other side, it goes back into the stream, it takes the chemicals with it. So getting growers to just realize, you know, just best management practices, silly things that they were doing. And then you also are encouraging alternative chemistry. So using new chemistries, which are targeted chemistries like herbicides and herbicides and larvicides for cobbling moth, which are much softer chemistries, very targeted. They don't take out the beneficial enemies, the beneficial insects, which take out the problem insects. Those are the products we encourage them to use. And over time, with multiple reinforcement from USDA scientists and Washington State and Oregon State entomologists, growers have adopted these techniques, and we've actually reduced pesticides in the valley significantly as a result of that. Just a couple of the programs. You can see that the total number of chemicals, and it's this particular one at the bottom here. I don't think there's a pointer, is there? So it's this one here. You can see the total number of chemicals in the valley has gone from a peak of 22,500 pounds used in the fruit industries down to around 5,000 pounds. And that's because of those soft chemistries that we've encouraged them to use. So you're using ounces compared to pounds, and they're very soft on the aquatic life. So what are the outcomes and impacts? Well, we had 5 times reduction in the number of pounds because of this. The new chemistries are patented, so they do come at a slightly more expensive price. But chlorpyrifos was reduced because we used alternative chemistries, and some of the growers just don't use chemicals at all. They just use the dormant oil spray as a standalone. And it's just as effective for some of those problems that we were seeing. The other thing is the targeted approach, and then we were given a letter because of the success of the program. We did attract some attention, so that's the one thing. We do post the information on my website. It's every other information is posted on the website for the public and anybody else to see. Some environmental group picked up on it and started trying to use it against us to say that the farmers were causing problems in the river because look at these toxic levels. They took 2 points in isolation without looking at the big picture of the reductions that we'd had, and they started to make a noise in Washington, D.C. So DEQ got together with the EPA and NOAA, and they all realized that, you know, this is actually the model for reducing pesticides, working collaboratively with extension, watershed councils, and also the growers to try and reduce this through a collaborative effort and a volunteer effort. So they actually gave us a letter of commendation, which they published on their website as a counter to the environmental lobbies trying to cause trouble with the results that we were getting, which were actually successful results in the end. So best management practices, I also introduced, and this was a grant that I subsequently wrote that DEQ funded, was to introduce Salmon Safe principles. Salmon Safe is an accredited third-party independent accreditation for reduced pesticide usage in production and in agriculture. And I helped write standards for peas and wheat, so it brought them into the fold because initially we were just testing the... how much time do I have? 3 minutes. So we're just testing the fruit industries at first, but then we realized, you know, this is targeting one group. We needed to expand it. So we ended up getting 18,000 acres of wheat and peas and rotation crops certified Salmon Safe on the Blues as a result of this. And I'm happy to say that the wheat and pea farmers never have in all the time we've been monitoring them, they've never had a single pesticide found in their tributaries and rivers. So they do a really great job of keeping the products where they're meant to be. So we've also had pesticide cleanups. DEQ has funded these things, which I asked them to do. So we've had pesticide cleanups and also recycling events of pesticide containers. And in total, we've ended up removing more than 43,000 pounds of chemicals out of the valley. And some of those were legacy chemicals. We had DDT and Dieldrin being handed in, which were in, I can see John cringing. for those of you who don't know what those are, they softened the eggs softened the eggshells on eggs back in the day. So again, working with these principles, we were able to work with droplet size, with keeping the boom size down, the speed. We were able to keep the buffer zone at 10 feet, as well as planting and encouraging the growers to plant buffers. And I'm happy to say they've embraced this whole principle of planting sagebrush in the buffers to actually help mop up any chemicals that might drift there. So the conclusions, this is a great way to help growers do the right thing. It incentivizes them, the collection events, the pesticide and the container, empty of containers, recycling events, are huge incentives for the growers to want to participate in these events. So it's worked out really well. And the best part about it is it helps avoid regulation. We've been able to avoid the regulation in the 12 years we've been there. We've managed to keep those levels down consistently below the benchmark levels. The growers are just, you know, they get the recognition. They don't really care about the letter from NOAA, but the scientists do. The incentives are the Salmon Safe program. DEQ also funded a grant that I put together, which helped the growers subsidize those actual costs of increased cost of using targeted chemicals, which are more expensive. So they were given a $20 per acre subsidy for actually adopting the principles. And with that, I thank you.